we left off on chapter 11 last time. We had just a little bit at the end. We were covering, again, the recommendation to enjoy life in verses 7 through 10. And we saw that recommendation wasn't without limits, that you know there was a judgment for our actions. So the recommendation to fulfill our desires was not with a recommendation to go without, throw away restraint. And we were advised to remove sorrow and evil and pain from your lives. And we asked the question last time, but class was over. What areas in our life could we make application with that?
Recreation, job.
I guess in all aspects we're recommended to enjoy life, but with that application of restraint, what areas of our life could we focus that on? A lot of times when people say, "Oh, fulfill the impulses of your heart, do whatever you desire," what does that usually? What a lot of people lead? What does that lead them to?
Immorality.
Yes, immorality, mm-hmm. and sinfulness. And a lot of times it's into things which they think it's fulfilling of their hearts. So usually brings about exactly what we're talking about. What we want to remove. It brings about evil and sorrow. do you have any applications for that?
Of course, the terrible application would be to ruin one's health and family, possibly loss of job, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. Then this may be one of those hints in the book.
Correct. Yeah, we have the hint of eternal judgment. We're going to see that tonight in chapter 12 as well. But also, I guess I was looking to, a lot of times when people, I got the weekend, so I'm allowed to fulfill my desires. And so many people go out drinking, or in some cases they do drugs. And both of those, as Steve mentioned, both of those can lead to physical pains, lead to addictions that can ruin your careers, your jobs, can ruin families. And so that's not a desire we want to, that's a desire we want to stay away from, correct? Also, you mentioned immorality, sexual immorality. You want to steer clear of those things and the pains that can bring to families for adultery or even just fornication in the youth. A lot of things that people find desirous that lead, that can just, very destructive in their lives. And why was a man given this recommendation? Why was a man recommended to enjoy life? Specifically in verse 8 and also in verse 10.
It's fleeting.
It's a finite time.
Futility.
Yes, it's fleeting. In verse 8, we had Ecclesiastes 11, verse 8. But if a man lives many years and rejoices in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many, and all that is coming is vanity. So here, what's coming is vanity, what's coming is darkness. You only have the present to enjoy, right? Then you don't get that opportunity anymore. The time's passed. There no longer is a chance for enjoyment. And in verse 10, you mentioned the fleeting. And in verse 10, it says, therefore remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh. For childhood and youth are vanity. Of course, what's fleeting there?
Prime of life.
Yeah, prime of life. Or the childhood and your youth. Why is that a recommendation to enjoy what you have now?
Because you only get to do it while you're in the same.
Yeah, well, yeah, we don't have to do it when under sun. Mm-hmm. But it's youth versus what?
Well, it's prime of life.
Yeah, prime of life. Yeah, prime of life.
You going somewhere else?
So why would he recommend you enjoying life in the prime of life versus in your golden years?
It's going to go away.
Be so golden. Not more problems.
Good things and bad things. I mean, there's
chapter 12 of Splendor.
Yes. we're getting there. That's exactly right. In the golden years, one, you know, you're not necessarily guaranteed to get golden years, and even if you do get them, you find it might be a little more difficult to enjoy life versus when you're young. There's no pains and aches, and you're full of energy and vigor, and your body's capable of anything, so we think. And we learn later that's not the case. But you know, with age comes restrictions and limits, the limits of our body. So the best opportunity to enjoy life is while you're young. We got our whole lives ahead of us, right? Every one of us. And we have the review, but I'm going to skip that for now because we have all of chapter 12. If we manage to get through it all, we can cover the review, but I think we all know it pretty well. So in chapter 12, moves smoothly from this same thought of youth enjoying life, as we have youth, as it's fleeting and vanity, or fleeting and temporal. And we're advised to remember the Creator, verses 1 through 8. In 1 through 8, remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come and the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. While the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return after the rain. In the day when the keepers of the house...
You added some knots in there?
No, mine has lots of knots in it.
Verse 2 again?
Well, the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return after the rain.
So while they're not darkened? Is that what you're saying?
Did I say while not?
And it's got not darkened?
It says while the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are not darkened.
That's different from the New American. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The same. Okay.
So yeah, and they are not darkened. Okay. And when the clouds do not return after the rain. So before those things happen. In the day when the keepers of the house tremble, and the strong men bow down, when the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look through the windows grow dim. When the doors are shut in the streets and the sound of grinding is low. When one rises up at the sound of a bird and all the daughters of music are brought low. Also they are afraid of heights and of terrors in the way. When the almond tree blossoms and the grasshopper is a burden and desire fails. For man goes to his eternal home and the mourners go about the streets. Remember your Creator before the silver cord is loosed or the golden bowl is broken or the pitcher shattered at the fountain or the wheel broken at the well. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. And so in the very first verse, in verse 1, where it says, remember now your Creator in the days of your youth. And what do we think remember here means? We have a multitude of meanings. I defined it, when you look to the first thing you think of remember is like, oh, remember this, I remember that. And the dictionary defines that as to bring, remember, is to bring to mind or think again or to retain in memory. And that's exactly like, oh, I remember this, thinking about it. But here, when we're talking about remembering our Creator, just thinking about the Creator doesn't accomplish much. You know, recognizing that there's a God and nothing more without any action. If we look to Acts 19... Acts 19 and verse 15. And beginning of verse 14 says, also there were seven sons of Sceva, Jewish priests, who did so. And the evil spirit answered them and said, Jesus I know and Paul I know, but who are you? And of course, here it is, there's some men who are trying to cast out a demon by the name of Jesus and the name of Paul. And this demon knows Jesus. You know, they talk about, you know, remember to think of, you know, the realization of the existence. Demons know. Also in James 2:19. They have something along the same lines. In 2:19 of James, it says, "You believe that there is one God? You do well. Even the demons believe and tremble." And so we know, if we're talking about just a remembrance, is it a believing and recognizing and nothing more, we know the demons, they recognize God, they know of God. So this advice to remember Him, certainly the context implies something more. What would you think this remembrance to remember means? What is it implying here?
Remembrance, or remember to do something. Like that, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. They would remember the Sabbath day, but they had to do something besides just, oh yeah, today's the Sabbath.
Yeah, my boss told me to do something. I remembered it, but I decided not to do it. Right? It's not remembering to do it.
You won't need to do anything.
It's...
Michael, does Matthew 7, 21, 22 fit in that context? I just came to mind. Think about, suppose you're, a lot of people, let's say they believe in the Lord, but they won't do what He says, right?
Matthew 7, and what?
21, 22. I mean, they're thinking about the Lord, but they're not doing what He wants them to do. It's, doesn't no good. I mean, 23 tells us the consequence of that.
Yeah, well, it's a little different. This is a different meaning here. It's going a different direction, because you see in verse 22, these people were doing things. The problem here is those men weren't truly obeying God. They were doing things, I guess, for face value.
Yeah.
So here we're talking about, we're talking about doing things, but doing things for God. It's a, Ms. Fano mentioned, it's remembering and serving. Remembering, you know, to obey. And if you look at Exodus 20, verse 8. Exodus 20, verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And of course, I remember the Sabbath day. I'm not going to do anything. What follows is you remember to do something. It was an action. An action is to keep it holy, to be obedient, and follow the guidelines of what these men were supposed to be doing on the Sabbath. Also in Luke 17. In Luke 17, beginning of verse 31. Jesus is talking to the apostles and preaching. He says, "In that day, he who is on the housetop and his goods are in the house, let him not come down to take them away. And likewise, the one who is in the field, let him not turn back. Remember Lot's wife. For whoever seeks to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life will preserve it." Of course, he's telling about the judgment of things to come. But what does he say about Lot's wife?
Remember what happened to her.
Yeah, remember what happened to her. And not just, oh yeah, that woman who turned to salt, remember her? Yeah, that was an interesting story. Okay, never mind. Let's move on. It was a matter of looking to what happened to her and as an example, and how to lead us, and how our action, how it should guide our actions, correct? So it's this remembrance implies an active work. An action is required, and then that action is obedience to God. Remember our Creator, be obedient to Him, life of faith. It's more than just knowing and more than just realizing He's there. And why is it that the youth should remember the Creator?
One thing, the youth is going to need the Lord later on down the road.
That's contest with the past, right. You may not have the ability. Right.
Yeah, we're talking about an action, right? Uh-huh. And we're just speaking about when you, as you grow old, you lose some ability. There's limitations. So it's in our youth that we're best able to serve and we're best able to act. Correct.
That's what he's getting. He's going to need what he that later. If he didn't get it earlier, it's too late.
In our youth, we have the good times, the pleasantness of youth. When we're strong, we have strength, we have energy, vigor, we're best able to serve. And of course, that time frame, we have that prime of life is fleeting and it's temporary. And after that, as we read at the end of this verse, in verse 1, it says, before the difficult day has come. When the difficult day has come, it's going to be more difficult for us just to go about our lives, let alone, actively serving. Of course, we're all actively serving, but it's just difficult. How difficult is it?
I don't really like
that. It's interesting, Michael, that if we remove the chapter division, you have from verse 9 on through chapter 12 about youth. Mm-hmm. Tap the potential of youth and life under the sun. First, you rejoice. Verse 9. Verse 10, there's some things you've got to remove. And then third, if you want to tap the potential of youth, remember your previous, use your abilities to serve Him. Those three ways of tap the potential of youth and life under the sun.
Yes. Very good points. And so, he goes right after that, talking about how our youth and how we can best apply it, best tap the potential we have there. And he goes on, we talk about how the difficult days come, and before the sun and the light, the stars are darkened. And here comes the burdens that we talk about with the age, because there comes those limitations. And in verse 3 through 5, he discusses those. He goes into detail about the age and restrictions of man and how in some ways that prevents or makes it more difficult in remembering and serving our Creator properly. Of course, the phrases, he gives illustrations and phrases to what he's talking about. I wanted to look at each of these phrases and, describe the meanings of each. So we know clearly what he's talking about. So in verse 3, he talks... Well, actually, there's lots in verse 3. 3, 4, and 5. But the first phrase was when the keepers of the house tremble. And what do we think he's talking about here? Of course, he's beginning by talking about the house, this description of the body as a house.
When you're not as agile, obviously, as you get older, more fearful of, danger and that sort of thing, like myself falling or whatever it might be, or some big guy like Pete jumping up or something. I mean, the kind of things you wouldn't fear as you're younger, if you're more agile and bold.
Yeah. When I think of something trembling, I see all the people whose hands tremble. My grandfather had a hard time even drinking coffee because his hands shook so bad. When I think of tremble, that's when I think of his hands.
I've seen older people trying to eat peas on a fork. It's very difficult. I'd easily give up peas in my old age. I regret it. But not just for the inconvenience of it. But yeah, that's what we look at here is watching the house tremble. When we look at Genesis 49... may yet get rain.
She trembled.
These are just a few examples in the Old Testament. In Genesis 49 and 24, it's talking about those who shoot at Joseph, and it says, but his bow remained in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. And it's talking about here is his arms were his strength and his protection. In Job 26:2. It says, how have you helped him who is without power? How have you saved the arm that has no strength? Of course, here again, we're talking about, he's talking about, you know, the, it says, how have you helped him? It's talking about someone who's helping, someone who's saving, and it's the arms that are doing the saving. And we look at, we talk about, we said, the watchman of the house. What do watchmen do? They're on guard, right? To protect. You have watchmen, you know, watchmen for the president. They're there to protect him. They're there they're there to protect him. And we see several instances here with the arms as protectors and as saviors. Yeah, and also, of course, the providers. So I think here we're talking about the arms, and just in this final mention that, you know, the arms tremble as you age. It's the watchman of the house, so your arms just tremble. In verse 3, continuing, it talks about the and the strong men bow down, or in the New American, it's the mighty men stoop. What would that be?
Legs are no longer strong.
And their body.
Yeah, well, you think, that's the first thing you think is, you know, oh yeah, well, man just stoops. We all stoop as well. People stoop when you get older, but we're talking about the house is the body. So first is the watchman, which are the arms. And then here the mighty men are the, or most probably the legs. When you look at Solomon's 5:15, what do mighty men do? Mighty man, someone who's strong, is going to stand up erect, right? He's powerful. He's not cowering down. He's up. In 5:15, he's describing the legs. His legs are pillars of marble, set on bases of fine gold. Like his countenance is like Lebanon, excellent as the cedars. Of course, here the legs are talked of as pillars. What are pillars?
Support.
Yeah, but they're erect, correct?
Yeah.
They're straight. They're up. It's not too critical, but I think it's the legs. Is the watchmen or the arms? The legs are the mighty men or the pillars or the legs. And of course, here as they stoop, you know, as you get older, you don't stand straight up anymore. And have you ever seen? I was just watching Mary Poppins the other night. And that old banker at the end, he's got a cane, of course it's Dick Van Dyke, and his legs are all down like this, and he's close to the ground. he's stooping. His legs are bent. You don't stand up straight so much anymore. In verse 3, the grinding ones stand idle. Yeah, our teeth. Yeah. He says, you have, and the grinding ones cease because they're few. Of course, we didn't have the nice dentistry that we have back then, or false or dentures. But so as you get older, you lose your teeth, and of course that limits you on what you can eat, doesn't it? I had my wisdom teeth pulled out. I couldn't eat anything solid for about 4 days, and it wasn't fun. And you get to that age, and you're living off soup. That's a burden. I like meat. If you have a few teeth, you can't get it down. Also, those who look through windows grow dim.
Eyes.
Getting simpler, yeah. It's the eyes. They don't even need to read verses there to know that, you know, when we look at these few verses I have in Genesis 27, it looks back at Isaac and his Jacob. And as they grew older, their eyes grew dim. It's exactly how Jacob was fooled by, no, I'm sorry, Isaac was fooled by Jacob, you know, putting the hair on his arms and so forth. His eyes were dim, we lose our eyesight, cataracts and so forth. Verse 4, and the doors are shut in the streets and the sound of grinding is low. Again, we're looking at it as a, like as a house, but the house is the body. What part of the body would that be?
Ears.
Sorry?
The ears? No.
Well, this one, that's the next one, I think. The it fits in with the grinding is low.
Oh.
Probably back to the teeth again. So the doors are... I'm not going to give it to you.
Mouth.
Yeah, your mouth. And the doors are shut. You know, I don't know for what purpose. I guess maybe just to... I don't know. Well, it's not pleasant. when I rise up with the sound of a bird...
I'm always thinking about
Yeah, you don't sleep as soundly. I know.
Or as long.
Or as long. So, yeah, here is you rise at the sound of a bird, a little bird wakes you up. I know our grandmother, she doesn't sleep much at all anymore. No, Mimi, she's always saying how she goes to bed real late, wakes up real early. She's like, I can't sleep anymore. I just can't do it, even if she wants to. So you don't sleep as long, even if you want to, and things wake you up easily. The daughters of music are brought low.
Or if you're here.
Yeah, our hearing. And in the New American Standard says the daughters of song will sing softly. And so, yeah, you can't hear as well as you used to.
Oh, sing a little louder.
We'll turn it here today, though.
Oh, I just want to make mention, back on the windows grow dim, if you look at Genesis 48 and 40, you're going to be looking a while. That was supposed to be verse 10.
Wait, it says 10 here.
Oh, does it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right. I caught it after I emailed it, and then I printed them out tonight, and so it says 10.
Okay.
Whoever got the 40, it's not 40. Because I drew a bad, on my notes, I drew a bad 1. It looked like a 4. And so when I went back later, I was like, oh, there's only 28 verses in that chapter. So yeah, verse 10 in chapter 48 of Genesis. So afraid of the high places in the road, terrors on the road.
Afraid of, you know, dangers and so.
Yeah.
It should be more quite as intimidating as if you're younger.
It fits in with that, if you're not as energetic and not as vigorous, a lot of times the youth heal quickly. Yeah. The older you get, the slower you heal. So of course, you're going to be more fearful of getting injured, of, you know, of a high place. Well, one, getting to a high place, if you're walking up a hill, isn't as much fun as it used to be. And then, you know, and if it's talking about the dangers in the road, just, yeah, any danger, anything that poses a threat to your physical well-being, you know, you're going to be more fearful of getting hurt just due to the nature of the slow healing process.
The other thing is, too, you're not stable.
So you can experience that?
No, I mean, yeah, observe it, certain people.
A baby.
Won't say who. But that's, you know, it's just facts. If people only yeah. they get, the less their balance.
That's correct. And the almond tree blossoms.
What do you have any idea with that?
Mm-hmm. You got any idea?
I think Wally's a perfect one. Gray hair.
Yeah, probably gray hair, white hair. The almond tree blossoms white. I assume that's what he's meant, that's the mean. You know, is your hair changes gray into white. If you have another meaning, let me know. Mm-hmm. Oh, we'll go with that one. The grasshopper is a burden. Verse 5.
Slowing down.
have the strength he used to have for everything.
Yeah. And in what way does the grasshopper illustrate that best? Is it like the elephant? It's a grasshopper, yeah. It's little. And he's dragging himself along. That's significant. It depends on which verse you have. Like mine says verse 5, the grasshopper is a burden. And the New American Standard says the grasshopper drags himself along. In either case, if you carry a grasshopper, it's nothing. And if he's suddenly a burden, then you're really getting weak. You're without the... without the normal movement he used to have. And of course, if it's the other way, where the grasshopper no longer, he just drags himself along, of course, grasshoppers, usually they're bouncing and springing, right? Jumping all over the place. Perfect idea of energy, vibrance. The boing, 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 there they go. And they're hard to catch. And as, you know, to see a grasshopper just creeping along, yeah, it's just, the real lack of movement illustrates, the change with age. And the end of verse 5, the New American Standard says the caper berry is ineffective. And mine, the New King James Version, says desire fails. Mm-hmm. Desire fails is pretty straightforward. Desire fails. But if you had the caper berry version, if you looked it up, what would you find?
It was a stimulant. It was an aphrodisiac, they thought, among other things. It was a stimulant. So it's the idea of desire. It doesn't do you any good anymore.
Yeah, it's the idea of if it stimulates appetite or other desires. But in age, it's not effective anymore. It doesn't do anything. I also looked up, I also found that they believe, I guess, I don't know if it's, they actually found it to treat. If it's true or if it was something they believe, but they're saying that it was used to treat rheumatism, which is aching joints, and also inflammation. And of course, we know that those symptoms come with age, and yet the caper berry is ineffective at remedying that. So,
Michael, says that in desire no longer is stirred. You get things hard, you get motivated, you get older, and you have aches and pains. When you're young, boy, you just jump, want to go out, play and do stuff. As you get older, that vigor is, diminished to some extent.
And
you don't have that same vibrance in you.
Yeah, that's correct. And all of this, brings about to illustrate why the action in youth is important. This is really pick-me-up material right here. Mm-hmm. Feeling energized about everything to come. But it's a fact if you get to live that long. And it just goes to show to illustrate why you really need to take advantage of youth if you have it. James is the youngest one. No, Kayla's the youngest one in here. Y'all two are the youngest together. Take advantage of it. I'm still pretty young.
Of course, that youth includes you.
Yep.
The thing is, if you don't reach the point where you lose all these things, then you really lost your youth also, because you died.
It does.
And I'm thinking to myself, you don't have to be, quote, older to lose the ability to do some things. They're just from the happy sense of life, the evils of life, and people may have, same problems you might have later, just depending on the circumstances and such.
That's correct. You
so
never
if you
know.
Don't use it, it doesn't really matter what stage in life you are, if you don't use or not use, but if you want to enjoy the blessing, you have one.
Enjoy what you have and make the most of your abilities as you have them. Jim's absolutely right. You don't have to wait for old age for limitations to occur in your abilities. Anyways, accidents occur and all sorts of incidents that can rob you of the abilities you have and limit your what you can do. And you were just watching Pollyanna. I didn't watch it, but I didn't know what happened. And she told me the girl fell out of a tree and got paralyzed. So, it's just That was a youth, a child, that suddenly was restricted in what she could do. And moving on to verse 5 and 8, after covering that wonderful section on what comes of age, in 5, or in the end of 5, I should say, after we go through the pleasantness of age, we find what comes next, is that for man goes to his immortal home, and mourners go about the streets. Of course, that's death. Death comes to us. And in verse 6, it says, remember your Creator. Before the silver bowl is loosed, or the golden bowl is broken, or with the pitcher shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the well. What is common between each of those illustrations in verse 6?
To become useless.
That's correct. It fits in with the idea of death. That each of those things is broken. Each of them, no longer the functions they served, they're no longer able to perform those functions. They're broken. They're damaged, and that's the end of them. And before that occurs, we're again advised that we need to remember our Creator. Of course, we saw remember the Creator in our youth, but it doesn't just apply to youth, it applies throughout all their lives to remember our Creator, to obey, even if you do make it to old age, to remember your Creator before man's end comes. And the dust, before we return to dust of the earth, before the Spirit returns to God who gave it. The Spirit returns to God. At one point I looked at it differently, but now I look at it as God gave the breath to Adam in Genesis 2:7, which is life. That breath is life, and it's here we see the end of life, and that breath, that life returns to God. I think I took it once earlier on, before intense study, that that could be the spirit, the soul returns to God. I don't know which way you see it. I take it as, like I said, the life. We're talking here about the end of life, and here's the end of life. You return to dust. Man goes to immortal home, the grave. Vanity is vanity. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher, and everything's vanity. We're looking at what profit do we have under the sun? We have none. It's all vanity. Everything here culminates in death. Anything you've gained throughout your life, here in death, you lose it. That is the temporary nature of anything we can gain. And so, because it's not a permanent gain, it's only temporary, it's vanity. There's no profit realized under the sun. It's all lost. And so we reach the conclusion of this chapter, of the whole book, in 9 through 14. He first begins talking about his work. The wisdom recommends itself. In verse 9, verse 9 through 10, it says, and moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yes, he pondered and sought out and set in order many proverbs. The preacher sought to find acceptable words, and what was written was upright, words of truth. I already loved 12. So, the words of the wise are like goads, and the words of scholars are like well-driven nails, given by one shepherd. And further, my son, be admonished by these. Of making books there is no end, and of much study is wearisome to the flesh. So, we see here, all the conclusions and the recommendations of this book are worthless if not followed. The preacher, in doing so, he's throughout the whole book, he's given recommendations. He's given things to follow in our lives, how to apply in our lives wisdom. And he gives a final justification of why we should listen to him. Why do we listen to this guy? What worth does he have? What value is it to us? And what reasons does he give to recommend himself and this work, this book he wrote?
his knowledge, that he had arranged me proverbs and the things he had written. He had even taught other people knowledge, and he had pondered and searched. You know, he, in the beginning of the book, he talks about how he acquired some of this wisdom. He tried things, he did things to see how it worked.
Exactly.
He had experience.
He didn't just slap this together and one sleepless night, did he? And he went about his life. He was wise. We know he was wise. God gave him wisdom. But beyond that, yeah, he experienced all these things. He tried out everything. It says he taught knowledge. He was a teacher. The best way to learn something is by teaching something. he diligently worked at this. He pondered and sought out and arranged. It wasn't just a little scramble one night or I can't sleep, I'll slap this thing together. This was, it seems that it took a great deal of time to put this together. And of course, when we look at the chapter 2, all the things he did in seeking out, it did take a great deal of time. And what does it say about the work itself, about the book? In verse 10.
Words of truth.
Yeah, he wrote down, this is truth. What else did he say about it?
Correctly.
Right. Yeah, you wrote truth correctly. Mine also has it was written, what was written was upright, which of course gives that correctness, and it was also delightful words, pleasant words. I guess it's words that are desired to know versus being pleasant to hear, because some of the things we certainly read weren't always pleasant, but it's something, you know, something we've discussed, it's something man wants to know. Man wants to know what was profitable under the sun. It was something that man was desirous to know, and then he wrote it down for us. And of course, he moves on in verses 11 and 12, giving what the worth of wisdom is. And in verse 11, he says, the words of the wise are like goads. Actually, I'll skip that. Why should someone seek wisdom? And what is its worth, as he's given in verse 11?
Because the words of wisdom can spur us on to action.
Yes, that's correct. Is that how your version translates it?
Or? No.
That's your translation. Yeah, mine has the words of the wise are like goads. And that's why I gave the definition of a goad here. Something that urges or stimulates into action. The goad was a pointed rod used to urge animals to stimulate them in the right direction. So it's wisdom can lead and it guides us. And we've seen that before in chapter 4 and in several other chapters. Wisdom can guide us and leads us. Wise man has his eyes in his head, and the fool, he walks in darkness. And what else does it say also of wisdom? I'll go ahead and share it so we can move on. Okay. You talk about the words of scholars are like well-driven nails. And of course, what do nails do for a structure? Yeah, they hold it together. It provides support and security. It maintains the structure and makes the structure, this structure is trustworthy. It's been put together and it's held firm by nails, and that's what wisdom can do for us. I'm running out of time.
It couldn't be. I took that to mean also that we had to search for it. Possible meaning that it was something we had to search for and seek, or she didn't fall in your lap.
Well, that's true, but I don't see what it says right here about nails. Anyway, can't leave yet. The ultimate answer is fear God and keep His commandments. And the last question before we do that, we see it's in verse 13 and 14. Let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. So why should we fear? Why should man fear and serve God?
Because He's going to judge us.
Yeah, because we're going to judge. And we see that also in chapter 11, verse 10. That God is going to judge everyone. If you read these verses, I had Acts 17, 2 Corinthians. to every person, you know, every action, good or bad. And so we see here the final thing. We saw throughout the book there was no prophet under the sun. But that through these, if you follow this recommendation, we can have a prophet. It's just we don't get it under the sun. But what we do under the sun can give that to us. All right.